One of my favorite times of the week is a Monday morning at this time when we bring in Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, and we get to talk about food, recipes, and also Arthur's rants. We love them all. Good morning, Arthur.
Oh, my rant?
Yes.
Do I rant?
Well, when you pick out
something. I would call it kvetch.
Yeah, kvetch, yeah, yeah.
Okay, kvetch. Complaints.
Yeah.
It came up again this morning on the phone with Jill. And she said she wanted to make this recipe that was in the Times, but did it really have to have brown sugar in it? I said, you know, probably not. Everything has sugar in it now. I mean, really. As somebody who is type 2 diabetes and is careful about such things, I don't really want sugar in my savory food. It's enough that I crave dessert. Anyway, I was also, you know, I have these really strange cravings. And most of the time, I have to satisfy them myself. It means I got to get into the kitchen and cook. But this one was for a dish. I don't know why it happened. It's for a dish that I don't often order in an Italian American restaurant, but that's where I would get it. And I do know a restaurant here in Brooklyn that makes it very well. And you either call this chicken scarpagliello, which means shoemaker style, or chicken a la contadina, which means in the style of the peasant woman or the farmer woman. It's not a dish, by the way, that I would think of being made by a farmer woman because it's largely a chicken and sausage. Yes, there are other vegetables. It depends on how you make it. Truthfully, the dish that I usually would order in an Italian-American restaurant would be called chicken scarpagliello, which is nothing more than sautéed, I say sautéed because it's not deep fried, but shallow fried chicken, nothing on it, just salt and pepper. Cut into small pieces, preferably on the bone, but I'll get to that in a minute. And it's sautéed with garlic, whole cloves of garlic that are lightly smashed in the case of how I make it, and rosemary, and fresh rosemary, a couple sprigs. And if the garlic starts turning brown, you take it out. But basically, when you're cooking the chicken, it really won't turn brown until towards the end. Once the chicken is browned, you can put in just some white wine and maybe a little chicken broth and cook it for a few more minutes until you get a nice reduced juices in the pan and the chicken is fully cooked. It doesn't take very long because it's cut into small pieces. And that's the dish. However, what I was craving is that dish, but made also with onions, peppers, and potatoes. An elaborate dish. That would be more the contadina. I don't think anybody would call that scarpagliello, because the reason anything called scarpagliello is a poor dish, because the shoemaker was notoriously poor. You know, in fact, don't we have an adage or a saying about as poor as the shoemaker? So in Italy, they're poor also. And in fact, what I know is scarpagliello is not that dish at all. And that dish I've never found the New York chicken scarpagliello anywhere other than in New York. Now, if you're in Tucson and they're making it in Tucson, it's probably from a chef who started out in Brooklyn. And this has happened, you know, but they took what they considered Italian food, but it was New York Italian food, and took it to other states where they still think it's Italian food and other places. But the contadina is a really good dish. So I made it, and it didn't come out exactly the way I wanted it to, but it was very delicious. So here's what I did. In a snow-stick pan, a nice big skillet, because I had to accommodate quite a lot of food. And by the way, I did this for two. These are the proportions I did for just two. But in fact, it was probably enough. If you had a little pasta first, it would be enough for three. And of course, you can double it and make it for four. So I used 1 pound. They were three smallish chicken thighs. And because it was so hard to hack them into pieces, And if I bought them at the butcher, I would have had him do it for me. I did take out the bone in the thighs, but I left the skin on. I think you could probably make this dish not quite as nice and fatty and good with skinless, boneless chicken thighs. I don't want to use white meat, but if you love your white meat, cut the breasts into several pieces before you put them in the pan, cook them over relatively high heat. It takes about 7 or 8 minutes to get the skin side, to start it with the skin side down, and when the skin side gets brown, turn it over, let it cook another minute or two. Then take the chicken out. It won't be fully cooked, and put in. And I, for this 1 pound of chicken, I put in 2 sausages. It was less than a half a pound of Italian sausage. I bought these sausage because there's a new supermarket in the neighborhood, and they had some sausage I was unfamiliar with, and I bought them, and you know what? They were good. Supermarket sausage, most of the time, is the meat's cut a little too fine for me, and it has, there we go, sugar in it. Look at the package. You'll see dextrose in Italian sausage. Shouldn't be there. Anyway, so then I browned 2 sausage. Again, they were not fully cooked because I just wanted them brown at this point and sort of firming up a little bit so that I could cut them into pieces. I cut each sausage into 4 pieces once it was browned. And in the same pan that I cooked the chicken and the sausage, I threw in 1 red pepper, medium-sized red pepper, cut into strips, and 1 medium onion sliced thin. And I sautéed them for a few minutes, and then I, only literally 3 or 4 minutes, and then I added back the chicken and the sausage and 1/2 cup of dry white wine. I happened to be able to use a bottle that I'd started the day before. It was nice. If you don't have any open white wine, you can use 1/2 cup of dry vermouth. Most people have dry vermouth in their bar. And that's it. Oh, well, did I mention that I cooked the chicken, of course, with garlic, three cloves of garlic until they browned, and then I took them out, as I said, and a few sprigs of fresh rosemary. It had a wonderful rosemary flavor in the end. The rosemary I was able to leave in the pan until I finished browning the sausage, so the oil and the fat in the pan got a lot of nice rosemary flavor. And that was it. And then I let it simmer for a few minutes until the sausage and the chicken were done. Didn't take very long. First, I did it covered. And then there was quite a lot of liquid in the pan, reduced, you know, from the chicken, basically, and the wine. And so I uncovered the pan and let it cook down a little bit. Really good. Oh, the potatoes I pre-cooked. I cut 2 medium potatoes into, like, 6 or 8 pieces each, big chunks, and I boiled them until almost fully tender. Poke a point of a knife in to check it. Drain them and added them at the end to the chicken and sausage. Boy, was that good, gotta say. And pepper. I added salt and pepper, of course. Quite a bit of pepper. In fact, if I was making this just for myself, I might have added hot pepper. But I didn't. So here's a dilemma I come across all the time because I like fresh herbs and I don't have an herb garden. I have to go out and buy herbs. And herbs have gotten expensive. The rosemary for this dish was $2.99 for literally a small box of rosemary sprigs. So I used, at most a third of it in this dish, $1 worth of rosemary. And now I have all this rosemary. So I often dry rosemary when I have extra. And I would dry mint if I had it, but I buy dry mint. No, basically sage and rosemary are the two herbs that I dry. But I really would like to, I really like fresh. And the other day I made something using my dried rosemary. And I thought, well, you know, this is good, but it really would be better if it was fresh rosemary. So here's my new plan, that whenever I buy a fresh herb, like rosemary, dill, parsley, mint, sage, those are basically it for me. I'm going to have to plan a couple of meals using that herb. It's okay. So, for instance, rosemary. I have nice rosemary in the house. Today I'm going to make, because we have somebody coming to help us with computer stuff, so, and I'm going to give her lunch, too. And I know she loves chickpeas, somebody in our life, and she loves pasta. So I'm going to make pasta and chickpeas, and I'll use some of my rosemary for that. And then tomorrow, I have a couple of lamb chops in the freezer. I'm going to make the lamb chops with rosemary. That'll probably use up my rosemary. But rosemary is good with pork. You can make little holes. I saw somebody the other day making little holes in their pork and stuffing the holes with garlic and rosemary. Now, that's something I do for a pork roast. I even make something called arista, which is a Florentine pork roast roll. The meat, rib end, pork loin is rolled with a mixture of fresh rosemary, a lot of black pepper, quite a bit of salt, and chopped garlic, and you put that, or slivered garlic, and you put that in and roll up your meat, and God, is that good. Lamb, the same thing. But you know what? What I saw on TV was somebody stuffing pork chops with garlic and rosemary, and I never thought to do a thick pork chop that way, but why not? Dill. Now, dill does not hold up very well. It's one of those herbs, soft, tender herbs, that really, I find, does not store well at all. So once a listener told me, oh, take your dill, put it in the fresh dill, and put it in a glass jar, not plastic, but a glass jar, and freeze it. You know what? It was pretty good, except it still wasn't fresh dill. It was frozen dill, but it didn't turn black. And I don't know what the difference is between a glass jar and a plastic container, but I never had the nerve to find out. So nowadays, I just use up the dill. Now, one of the ways I use dill, I love dill, is I make my own, and I actually have some in the fridge right now, ranch dressing. I know I've talked about this before, but every time I give somebody my homemade ranch dressing, they ooh and ah about it, so I might as well do it again. My ranch dressing is one-third mayonnaise, one-third sour cream, although you can use Greek yogurt, and one-third, but then again a little more, of buttermilk. So you actually have two low-fat ingredients with your high-fat mayonnaise. And you stir the three together. Why I say about with the buttermilk is because in the end, I almost invariably end up adding a little bit more buttermilk to make it the pourable consistency I'm looking for. So you mix those three together, and then I would say a half a bunch of dill. I mean, use up that dill. Half a bunch of dill, chopped fine, and a nice handful of finely chopped parsley. And if you have them, and a lot of people have them in their garden, chives. Chives are always nice in this. And then garlic. And I grate the garlic into the mixture using my microplane for one-third, for a cup of base. One large clove of garlic is really enough. Salt, pepper, and then at the end, a couple dashes of Worcestershire sauce. In the end, you're going to want to taste it all. Now you're going to have a half a bunch of dill left over. What are you going to do with it? Well, one of the things you can do with it is make a chopped salad, a Middle Eastern-style chopped salad, tomato, cucumber. I like scallions, but you can use red onion, white onion, whatever kind of onion you like. And then dill, a lot of dill. And or some oregano. And or, here's a dry herb that I love. Mint. I always keep dry mint in the house. I buy mint at a Middle Eastern store. It's a spearmint, very strong mint. And I must say, dry mint lasts a lot longer than other dry herbs. And so in a pinch, so to speak, I pinch my dried herb, my dried mint. I only use dry oregano. I never bought fresh oregano. And I always like to tell this story about my friend Rita De Rosa. Rita is, I guess, now 91 or 2, still cooking every day in Naples. She's my friend's mother, living in Naples. And when Rita came to New York to cook in her son's restaurant, only for a short time, by the way, she was intrigued by fresh oregano, which she saw that other people were using. So she had never cooked, believe me, she had never cooked with fresh oregano. But here's what she did, and it really works. She took fresh oregano, and she literally plastered lamb chops with leaves of fresh oregano and put them into a plastic bag. And overnight, literally overnight, the lamb chops picked up this wonderful oregano aroma and flavor, mainly aroma. Very good. Sage is something I do buy fresh. And right now, this is something a habit I got into when I was living in West Cornwall. And I did grow sage. By the way, sage grows extremely well in the northwest corner climate, and some people can even overwinter their sage, but even if it dies back in a deep frost, it comes right back in the spring. Anyway, but I would harvest my sage right now and dry it for Thanksgiving. Just hang it in the kitchen. The first day or so, it's going to smell wonderful, and then you don't smell it anymore. But I like my Thanksgiving dressing or stuffing, whatever you want to call it, with a lot of sage. So, and dry sage is what you buy when you buy those poultry seasonings. It's mostly dried sage. And by the way, if you dry your own sage, you're going to find that it's not so easy to crumble, which is why I don't know if they still label dry sage this way in the supermarket, but they used to call it rubbed sage, and I found you really do have to rub it to get it to crumble. Anyway, so sage I use in beans, for one thing, fresh sage, cook some cannellini beans or any kind of white bean with some leaves of fresh sage and a couple of cloves of slightly smashed garlic, and the beans become really... I mean, by the way, the bean water is delicious. So cook them slowly. Add salt after they've become tender. You definitely want to soak your beans. Same thing with chickpeas. Now, I meant actually to put some chickpeas up yesterday. I'll have to do it today because I have some really special chickpeas. Ha-ha, we'll see. But I like sage with chickpeas. I also like rosemary with chickpeas a lot. I think I told you that. I'm going to make today chickpeas with rosemary and pasta. I use a flat noodle, a pasta, that I can't find anymore, but I have some in the house. I like to make chickpeas with pasta with several different pastas, but I do like a flat pasta. So what I would do is, I'll never find that other pasta again, is I'm going to buy lasagna and break up the lasagna into, let's say 1.5-inch pieces. Even the curly edge pasta. I like the curly edge lasagna. And that's a very good noodle to go with chickpeas. Now, the way I do chickpea, I do them two ways. I have my diet way and my not diet way. My diet way is to not saute the garlic in olive oil, but to just add to cooked chickpeas in their liquid, a chopped clove of garlic or two and some rosemary and simmer it, and then add the oil at the end. Now, why is that a diet way? Because for one thing, you're not cooking the olive oil and you're just putting it in raw, in which case it has all the antioxidants and good stuff that you're eating olive oil for, plus flavor, gotta say. Salt and pepper, I like hot pepper, you could use black pepper, and that's it. It's the simplest thing in the world. Now, I do this with canned chickpeas. I just empty the can, I do not drain them. I mash up some, by the way, either with the fresh chickpeas cooked or canned chickpeas. You mash up some of them, and then you mix it with the pasta. And the mashed up, of course, makes sort of a thick sauce, but you want some pieces of chickpea in there. So don't mash it all up. But you could. You could use your immersion blender and make a puree of chickpeas, and in that put already cooked pasta, and then drizzle it with olive oil. There's so many ways to do it. The old-fashioned way, of course, is to sauté garlic with rosemary and olive oil, then add your cooked chickpeas and mash up some, or not, and then add the pasta. Now, the other pasta that I use for this is called pasta mista. When I wrote Naples at Table 20-whatever years ago, God, it must be almost 30 years since I was testing all those recipes, you could not buy pasta mista in the U.S., but now I see it in the stores, and it's mixed shapes of pasta in one bag. And you're going to say, as everybody always does, don't they cook at different times? And the answer is, of course they do, which is the whole point here, is it adds a variety of textures to what is basically a really poor person dish, which is mashed up chickpeas. very healthy, but cheap. So that's it. What else? What are the herbs? Oh, the parsley. Let me say, I have a problem with parsley because I always need parsley, but I don't never need as much as I have. So what I've taken to doing lately with that is the leftover parsley after I've made a dish using fresh parsley, even with the stems, not the heavy stems, but certainly the fine stems, put it in my mini processor with olive oil, a big spoonful of dried oregano, garlic, and salt, of course pepper, and that's it. And make it into a chimichurri, which is the Argentinian parsley sauce. That goes on, in Argentina especially, it goes on grilled meat. Beef is the big deal in Argentina. But I find chimichurri is good on almost anything, even a slice of toast. So if I have extra parsley, it becomes chimichurri, where it can stay in oil. A little vinegar, too?
No.
For at least 4 or 5 days, by which time you should be able to finish it.
You know, it's
That's
funny when you talk about herbs. When I buy herbs, it goes bad. So they now sell in this in Le Bon's. They sell these little small fresh cut cups, the little plastic cups, and it's fresh herbs. And
it's in a cup?
It's in a plastic container. And it's
are they growing or are they cut?
No, they're cut, but they're all
interesting.
And you know what? There's just enough for about to season one or two dishes. That's all. And it doesn't take up a lot of room. It doesn't go bad.
Well, I don't know. I buy herbs in the supermarket in those little plastic containers. Little they clip close. You know, they're a clamshell type thing, and they go bad.
Well, they go bad after you, but they
don't, you got to use them.
Yeah, but it's not as much as when you
but,
buy it.
But you know, the prices of everything are so high now, and yeah.
Gesundheit.
$2.99, you know, for a little box of herbs. That's why I'm being so, you know, careful about what I'm doing with them. I'm trying to plan more than one meal out of a $2.99. Think of herbs.
You know, I buy a lot of cilantro, and you just get—it's too much. You know, you can't. I can't use it all.
Yeah.
On thing. You know,
I don't know. I'm not a big fan of cilantro, although I'm not one of those people who hate it. I live with somebody who hates it. You know, some people are sensitive to the taste of cilantro. They think it tastes like soap.
I need it when I make guacamole, though. I need it so bad.
You need something.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's just mashed up avocado.
Well, that's true.
I mean, really.
I put chili powder in it. I put garlic. I put hot sauce.
Yeah, you got to do something.
Yeah, but it's great. It's great on toast. I'll tell you, it's great on toast.
Oh, avocado toast, man.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I never thought. I used to laugh at people when they talked about avocado toast.
No, I like avocado toast.
Yeah, it's great. It's a great refreshment from cream cheese and butter.
Well, it's healthier than cream cheese, that's for sure. All right. So I don't know. Today's going to be really overcast. Cold up there?
It's 55, and it's going to be this way. It's
going to be warmer than it is here.
Yeah, it's going to be this way for probably the next 3 or 4 days.
Yeah, unfortunately. It's only in the 50s here right now.
Yeah.
So, and it's raining a little bit.
I think this is going to be a soup week for me, making soup.
I've made a lot of soup lately. I have to say, we both had dental issues. And so I made a big pot of vegetable puree with cream to make it palatable.
I made some bone broth.
But I must say, for days we were eating, and there was nothing in this pot except carrot, onion, celery, and a head of cabbage. And in the end, with just water. It was delicious, I got to say.
Yeah, I made some bone broth yesterday.
Oh, well, I have to go get the bone.
Yeah, yeah.
Bones are up to $3 a pound in my neighborhood.
Yeah, they are.
I'm waiting for the... I got to go to the butcher, and for him, I got to get in the car. And I did make broth with the $3 a pound bones, but I don't know.
It's an easy thing to make, and it's a nice space.
I know, but
have.
I'm not used to the prices yet.
Yeah, I know.
Adjusting to inflation.
Well, that's the great thing about a credit card. I don't really look at the price.
I know you don't, but I do. I have a credit card also, and I use a credit card. So I used my visit to the supermarket used to be my weekly big order thing would be like $120, not a lot really. Yeah. Supplemented with other visits, but the big one. Now it's $180.
Yeah.
2 weeks in a row now, $180 without a lot of meat.
Yeah, it's expensive. It is expensive.
So, yeah, it's to live. Well, I must say the choice is clear.
That's right. I agree with you. All right, Arthur.
We got to eat. All right, and actually it's the one thing I don't mind spending money on.
All right. I'll speak to you next week.
All right, take care.
Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, this morning here on The Breakfast Club on Robin Hood Radio.
Underwriting support for Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, Hillsdale Home Chef. More information, 518-325-7000, hgshomechef.com.
Robin Hood Radio is WHDD AM and FM Sharon.